Gentlemen, I am honored to join you today for us to review a thing.
Welcome, everybody, to DRAT. That's Dad's Review a Thing. It is a podcast we do sometimes. And this is one of those.
Hooray!
Hooray.
And this is a time that that happens.
We have a trifecta of dads here to review Onward, the newest Disney Pixar venture, which just came out in theaters and now has also just come out on streaming. And we are better for it, I think.
Oh, yeah.
Gotta be funny.
I'm sad to report that it is by far the lowest grossing Pixar movie of all time, I think.
I mean, that's not going to be too hard considering it came out in theaters and like that day, it's everyone's like, by the way, everyone stay home. Let's close everything. So it's not necessarily its fault.
Oh, no, not at all. Yeah.
If theaters were left open, would it have been the lowest grossing? And I think it would have a similar run to The Good Dinosaur. Like, yeah, that's, you know, the images are moving. So technically it is a moving image.
It is.
And that's about it.
See, it is a family picture, which gives it the benefit, especially currently because there's not a ton of competition. It was before Trolls World Tour, so it wouldn't have had that to go out against. It came out after Sonic already got its little bump. So it pretty much had the runway to do just the family movie thing, which generally every family movie that comes out does pretty well because of that. But right when it was about to do that, someone like ran onto the runway and it was like, look out, geese. And someone's like, what are you talking about? And then just geese just splattered. It's like splatted right into the front of the plane, choked the engine, and the thing fell over, crashed and burned. And then someone streamed
that. I'm going to explain coronavirus to my children exactly that way. I'm just going to tell them that it was geese on a runway.
I think it's an accurate picture. It's exactly what's going
on. So for context to our listeners, I am Chris. We are joined by Kyle and Dan. And Dad's Review a Thing is when we're dads and we review a thing. I don't know why I explain that to you like you're idiots, but we are dads. So I feel like that explains it.
And what do we do as dads on this show again?
We explain things like idiots. Two idiots.
Like dads do.
Like dads do. Man, right now, side dad tangent. I started reading Charlie, and Lily's there too, but mostly Charlie, The Hobbit. And it's a fun venture because Charlie... Like, part of it was, we're going to read him The Hobbit, and then he can actually watch, potentially, the movies, because he'll have context, so he won't be as scared. Mm. But it's also just fun to read The Hobbit, because it's a great book, and you get to do all the different voices and stuff. Mm-hmm. And, oh boy, reading a five-year-old a book that has a ton of concepts that are foreign to a five-year-old. So I'm like, let me read you the story of The Hobbit. What's a hobbit? Let me read the story.
Yeah, start that's reading. Page one.
Yeah, like what is that? Where is he? Who is he? Bilbo. What's a Bilbo? Okay, hold on. Baggins. What's a Baggins? Hold on. Just give me a second. He's a hobbit. What's a hobbit? Hold on. He's like a person, but like not. He's like a half. He's like a halfling. What's a halfling? Whoa. He's like a small human. He's like a small human with big hairy feet. Let me get going. And of course, like four pages in, it's like, oh, what is a hobbit? Maybe I should tell you. And he's like, oh, what is a hobbit? Like just listen now. And so every bit we got through the chapter with the trolls. And it's three trolls named William, Thomas, and one other one, and the third one. And every time it's like, and then Thomas said this, and he's like, who's Tom? Like, he's one of the trolls. What's a troll? Like, oh, you know, okay. Like, okay, and then William, like, who's William? Wait, who's William? Like, what's, he picked up Thorin. What's Thorin? Thorin's a dwarf. What's a dwarf? Oh, he's like a hobbit, but a little taller, but not as big as a human, and he's got a beard, and they're gruff, and So that's my headspace. Anyway,
that's much further than we got. I attempted to read The Hobbit to my kids, and I think I got as far as the first three or four page long song.
Oh yeah, that'll do it.
Before my kids are just like, this is enough. What you've given us is enough. Thank you. Thank you very much. Next.
Thank you. We feel cultured. We're going to go back to Power Rangers.
See, it doesn't get better when they get older. Yep. I wanted to watch Lord of the Rings recently because it will soothe me to watch people walking around in the wilderness. And, you know, Liam's like, oh, that's that golden box of Blu-rays that's been sitting there since my birth. Can I watch it? I'm like, yeah, sure. So we're watching it and he's like, oh, I know what happens. I read The Hobbit. I'm like, no, that's, you read The Hobbit, the book. This has a movie that has hobbits, the species in it, but it's a completely different story. He's like, no, I know what happens. And I'm just like, I could throw you through a window, son. They are speaking in Elvish. Just read the subtitles and shut up.
So trying to explain to him, before we even started reading The Hobbit, Charlie was asking me stories because every time I put him to bed now, he'll ask me generally are there video games or movies that contain blank in them? And at one point he's like, are there any movies in this world that have dragons in them? There are so many. He's like, what's one? The Hobbit movies. What's The Hobbit? It's this. What's that? It's what's Lord of the Rings? And I explain, okay, Lord of the Rings and this. And he's like, what happens in it? What else is in that movie? Are there other things? I'm like, yes, there's orcs. And what's an orc? okay. And then there's some bigger ones called Orokai. What's an Orokai? It's like a big goblin, a big orc goblin thing.
Goblin and an orc crossbreed.
Yeah. And it's like, okay, got these things. And there's wizards. There are wizards. Okay, what else? There's Sauron. It's okay. And I start, somehow I explain, so the thing is Sauron, he's the devil. It's like, yeah, he's like the devil. Exactly. You got it.
That one he's got down.
And so he explained, but the thing, he's really powerful and he's really evil. So they have to stop him. And he has this one ring. The One Ring, in fact. And they find it and they have to take it and destroy it. And it has to be brought to this volcano called Mount Doom and thrown into the fires of Mordor. And he's like, oh, I'm like, yeah. So they have to take it, but no one can touch it because it's so evil that it causes you to be bad. And so, they get together and he goes, stop. But Dad, how can they take it there if they can't touch it? I'm like, oh, buddy, there are three movies / three books that explain this exact question.
The answer is they slowly turn evil and die.
Which good on him that he at least understands the basic plot structure is, wait a minute, how do you destroy this thing if you can't touch it? How will they get it that far without it stopping them? I'm like, yes, if only someone thought to tell a story that has that exact conflict in it.
Yeah, he's thinking that it's like an epic, the floor is lava scenario, I think.
I mean, he's not wrong. That's not wrong, though. I mean, we've seen it.
It's like a moral floor is lava scenario.
Exactly. I'm proud of him because he's picking up more and more on things, and I'm surprised how often he's noticing things. So we just started playing Kingdom Hearts as well. And I thought, oh, yeah, Disney characters, because he'd asked the titular question, are there any games in this world that have Tarzan in them? Like, a couple. I can think of two. And he's like, oh, what are they? I'm like, one is Tarzan game. I don't have it. It's an old game that I don't have. And then the other one is Kingdom Hearts. What's Kingdom Hearts? Oof. My first explanation was, it's Disney with Final Fantasy characters, but then I realized, that's not going to help him much. Because he doesn't, and then I realized he doesn't actually know who Disney characters are, because he just knows cartoons. Interesting. So, eventually, I try to tell him Kingdom Hearts, so we start playing it. And it's a JRPG, so it starts out with Sora gets this, tutorial through a dream premonition. And then after he wakes up, it was a dream. And then he goes about his day-to-day on Destiny Island, and it's this whole cute thing. But then suddenly darkness happens, and then the enemy strikes. And Charlie, after, an hour or so, he goes, it's just like the dream the boy had. I'm like, yes, welcome to JRPGs, my son.
Oh, I have to tell a similar but much simpler story. First of all, thank you for that, because I was about to ask Chris, what is Kingdom Hearts? I'm a grown man and I don't know. And I think I played half of one, but I, you know, desperate for things to do with the kids during especially the week where all four of us were trapped in the house together. I actually, Chris, you inspired me because you asked online if anybody had any good Dungeons and Dragons similes for small children. And I did actually bust out the free one that's on DungeonsandDragons.com, Heroes of Hesiod.
Nice.
Which is supposed to be for ages 6 and up. So I was very much railroading the kids, walking them through every little step, helping them roll the die. You know, it was slow going. And the worst part is that they explain, okay, this, you're supposed to have like 5 player characters and then the DM. Well, I didn't have that. I had a 5-year-old, a 3-year-old, and I'm DMing. And then I said, and then mom's going to play as this character. And Rosalie said, what? And she left the room. So it was me and the two kids. And it's the simplest tabletop RPG you can think of. It's literally just, okay, you're going to train to become monster hunters. How do you do that? Enter this map. There are 4 cages. Each cage opens up and there's a new monster that comes out. And it was very much the same thing as you trying to explain Lord of the Rings to Charlie, where it's like, okay, so this one is a beholder. What's a beholder? It's like a giant eyeball monster. Why? why indeed? I don't know. Because that sounds really scary. You know, and I'm explaining, okay, so, you know, you roll the die and that number plus your attack number. And if it, and I'm explaining the concepts, and a lot of the questions that I got were, wait, so if his defense modifier is higher than my attack modifier, how come it doesn't beat down his defense number as well? Because I felt like Kyle Reese in The Terminator when he's being interrogated by the LAPD and he gets frustrated and just goes, I didn't build the damn thing. But it worked out pretty well, except my kids have a tendency to go into a monster hunter game and then proceed to run away from the monster all over the map for an hour and a half, which is what happened. I never opened a second cage because it was just the first monster chasing them around. But my daughter, who is had a lateral thinking D&D moment that I was so proud of, she was playing as a rogue and she said, I want to get away from the monster. I run into his empty cage and slam the door. And I'm like, there's nothing in the rule book about this. Okay. It works. You run into the cage and you slam the door. And now the monster can't get you. And there was no moment after that. It was just, okay, I didn't think to do that. So I was proud of that, but I was also frustrated because I am the monster. So I don't know how to proceed.
Mm-hmm. I sense a segue, speaking of D&D, and that a version of in the film, in Onward, Chris Pratt, elf, troll, whatever he is.
He's an elf.
He's super into D&D, but apparently in this world, it's based on historical events.
Which I love.
And I don't know. I think the movie should have been based around him. Not the Spider-Man elf, but the Star-Lord elf. And this is why. The whole point of magic going away in this movie, and this is a movie where the, you know, magic existed, but then people were lazy and didn't want to learn how to do it, so they just invented technology as a convenience. The whole point is that it was hard, but then literally in the course of 24 hours, Spider-Man elf figures out magic exists and then is able to perform every single spell, including the most difficult ones, in a day. So it's not that hard. And
so
I think it would have been a better platform for the movie to be that, you know, they didn't just invent technology to replace magic, but they invented technology to shortcut magic. So like they've got a bunch of magic wands plugged in to their Hoover Dam or whatever, and it's just powering everything. And the idea is that they took this chaos and organized it, made it structural, you know, kind of the everybody in their place and everything on the shelf, everything needs to be less chaotic. And then you've got this Chris Pratt character who is just chaos, and everybody says he's a screw up. And then by the end, you find out that like being a screw up was, being a little chaos was good. Like, I think that would have been a stronger reason for magic to have gone away, other than just, oh, it's easier to flip a light switch than it is to whisper an incantation.
So for greater context, for anybody listening who doesn't know exactly what Onward is, the basic premise, as Dan alluded to here, is that there is this fantasy world where magic used to be a thing, and then someone invented electricity, basically, and modernized things because they realized that doing magic was actually hard because it takes focus. So decades go by, however, centuries, whatever, it goes from primitive to modern technology, like our daily life, and magic is pretty much gone. There are two boys, one who's just turning 16, and he's played by Tom Holland, Spider-Man, and the other is his older brother, who's played by Chris Pratt. They're elves. They have a mother who's played by Julia Louis-Dreyfus, who's also great. Their dad passed away right before the 16-year-old's birth. It alludes it as probably cancer, because they mentioned he died from a sickness, and so he never got to meet his dad. And the older brother only knew his dad for a couple of years. And they're very sad in that. So, but on his birthday, his dad has requested that on the 16th, when both his sons are over 16, they get this present. And it turns out to be a wizard staff, which Chris Pratt's character is very excited about because he is into the Dungeons and Dragons they have there, which he says, of course, is historically accurate. They attempt to do a spell that the dad included, which will allow them to bring the dad back to life for one day from sunset to sunset. And they have 24 hours to do this. And so they start the spell and they fail it. And so they only bring back half of the dad. So they have the dad's legs and they realize they have to find another phoenix gem to power this spell before the end of the day, or they will not get to see the rest of their dad. And that's the whole point of the movie, is them trying, these two brothers trying to go find this gem so that they can bring the rest of their dad back for the day. And now you know the premise.
Yeah.
And that's another thing.
And
the spell is supposed to work for 24 hours, and they don't finish it correctly, so they only get half the dad, right? So then, spoiler alert. No,
they got the whole day. They got the whole 24 hours, but it basically is like they have 24 hours before this to complete the spell so that they have
didn't get the whole dad.
Yeah, but then they find another phoenix gem and they do the spell again for the top half. So why didn't they, like, the legs disappear and then they get another day with the top half?
Well,
because that would be horrifying, Dan.
Oh, better than just, I mean, like, a penis and legs?
So, the thing is, this is a movie for children.
And also, they needed that for the sequel, possibly, Dan.
So Shreya and I, we actually discussed this after watching it, because she didn't love the movie like I loved the movie. I cried a couple times because I am a sucker for Pixar. They got me. They get me. They always get me. And they got me here, too, because there were actually some really touching moments that I really did, like, well up and was legit crying, because I thought there was a lot of very sweet, tender moments. And I was arguing, like, this movie is definitely about family, the importance of family, the importance of listening to one another and, like, learning about each other and supporting each other, mainly supporting each other. And I liked that the both brothers wanted to support each other. They made sacrifices for each other. Like, they put each other first frequently, and I really appreciate that. And then the mom, of course, is a great mom because she's going to do whatever it takes to go save her kids and make sure her kids are safe. And I'm like, I like that. She's a good mom, too. So all of these elements, I'm like, they got it all for me. And the finale was fun. It had some fun moments. It had some really heartbreaking moments. It was really bittersweet, and it has a super bittersweet ending. And I don't want to just give any away. It is bittersweet because, like, it's not exactly what you expect, but it is very, very sad. But then immediately it's like, and everything's kind of happy now. It has some cool messaging there. But Shreya and I had to argue because like, I totally got it from a storytelling point of view, where it's like, well, yeah, they go through the story and they have to lie to the police frequently, which I thought was kind of funny that the boy's not stepdad, but like soon to be stepdad type of thing. The mom's boyfriend is a police officer who is a centaur. Was it Officer Buck, right?
Or something like
that. He was Colt Bronco.
There we go, Colt Bronco.
Lots of horse puns.
It's funnier coming from you than any time the movie told that joke, Kyle.
I liked his
character. My boy did absolutely crack up at the, I'm going to give you to the count of three, and then he starts stamping his hoof.
Yeah, that was the best.
Which I believe was in the trailer.
Yeah. I liked that character well enough because he seemed like a pretty decent, like, it reminded me somewhat of those classic like 80s and 90s movies where you've got the stepdad in the movie and they're always like a super nice guy, like in Liar Liar, where the stepdad character is super nice and the only reason we're supposed to hate him is because he's not the main character or he's not the dad that we're wanting back together. So it's like, I kind of like this officer. He's not a bad officer. He's not corrupt. He's not abusive. He's not cruel. He's just, you know, he's kind of over this nonsense and not even in like a totally dismissive way. He's just like trying to keep him safe. I'm like, okay, this is fair.
No, I was saying he's a good guy. It reminded me a lot of the dad in Escape, or not Escape, but just Into the Spider-Verse. Because if you pay attention, that's not Miles' dad. It's his stepdad, but at no point is there any sort of friction. There's a little friction in this one, but it wasn't like,
I believe.
Oh, you're trying to replace
his dad, though.
No, he's his dad. I hadn't heard that.
He's his dad.
Yeah. In Spider-Verse?
Yeah, it's a complicated thing that they don't get into in the movie, but in the comics, they explain that Miles goes by Morales because his dad's last name has connotations with his uncle, who's the criminal, and they don't want their son being wrapped up in that or something like that. I know because Rosalie looked all that up because she was very confused why he went by his mom's last name instead of his dad's. Yeah, I mean, it seems like a flimsy answer for why, but I guess it...
Well,
it
Officer,
comics, but...
Officer Mustang Bronco Horse Horseman Bojack was a pretty cool guy. And but then again, that brings up another problem with this film. The film broke something that Monsters, Inc. had already fixed. And that is, when you have a society of different shaped and sized people, you need to have societal technology that addresses that. You know, like you have different sized doors and different sized buttons and just different sized everything to accommodate different sized things. Even in Zootopia, you know, you got the little doors for the little animals. In this one, you've got the centaur who's trying to squeeze himself into a car. Centaur.
Well, and I think a big part of that is that for Onward, they were seeking to do this thing where it was as close to real life and real society as human, as I almost said humanly possible there, but as close to our life and our society as possible, but with the species and the magic and all of that added as like flavor, kind of a Flintstone scenario where it's like, oh, there's an analog to everything, to the point where Colt Bronco, his vehicle is literally a Ford Bronco. I looked close enough at it and I said, oh, that's a cute thing. But you're right, Dan, there was no reason why they couldn't give him a Bronco that he could conceivably actually climb into. Tellingly, we never saw him climb in or out of it.
And also the little fairies that had to ride motorcycles that were like 50 times bigger than they were.
And I'm gonna, and this is where I start to become the pretentious guy who's like, well, let me explain this movie for children. dang it, I hate me. Zootopia is going to focus on how they need to make society work for everyone because the focus of that movie is on society working for everyone. Onward does not need to focus on society working for everyone because that's supposed to be assumed that their society functions and that that's not the conflict of the movie. The conflict of this movie is these brothers need to learn to actually respect one another and care for one another because they're the family that they've got. And that's, so the focus of this movie has to be on that. It's the same reason why the longer you look at a Toy Story movie, the more you want to eat the back of your own head, because none of the logic makes any sense.
Oh, especially the all toys instinctually freeze whenever a human enters the room, even right. The ones that don't know that they're toys, even the ones that are toys made of arts and crafts materials like Forky. Let's not talk about that. But
because that added a whole new level, and I love the Toy Story movies, and I think those are fantastic. I have nothing but glowing things to say about those. And in Onward, that's why I allowed a lot of things there. And when Shreya's like, wait a minute, they lied to the police. Like, this person lied to the police. This person started a fire. Like, they burnt their own restaurant down. They should go to jail. That risks people's lives. And I wanted to be like, yes, if that was the point of the movie, all of those things would be true. But the point of this movie was not to focus on don't break the law. The movie was, let's make family work. So even though, like, at the end of it, you realize that these people have left this wake of, let's see, they've left a wake through an arson, definitely wrote, like, highway collisions, like a huge highway collision, like, every which way. There's collateral damage everywhere. There's definitely dead. There's dead magical creatures out there.
There's dead people. Well, I mean, you've got, we've seen buildings blown up in the sense of a joke before, like with the Muppets movie, the new one, where they go to get Gonzo on board, and he's like the rich toilet magnate. He's like, I've been waiting for you to ask, and he just pushes a button and his empire explodes. Yeah, that's funny, and that's not the point of the movie. It's a throwaway gag.
Well, that's so Muppets.
That's okay. But there were multiple instances in this film through multiple species where it's like they killed all the humans and moved into our society and are just like too lazy to fix it. So you've got the, you know, I don't know. I think Monsters, Inc. did it better, where you can see the analog that this is like a society that mirrors our own, except it's monsterish. But it is their world. It's not our world that they took over. So if
I think there is a point to it being as close to our society as they within the construct of what they have. And I you know, because it goes back to the whole idea of, oh, and then technology developed and then we didn't need magic anymore. And that's why magic went away, is because we've used technology to kind of become lazy. And it's amazing that Brad Bird isn't involved in this movie, because it has a very Brad Bird rugged exceptionalism, individualism streak to it, much like an Incredibles movie. Almost a big part of that is going into the first 20 minutes where all of this is explained. I was really hoping that I wasn't going to get a Flintstones movie where the whole movie is just full of jokes about how, see, it's like McDonald's but different because magic. Mm-hmm. We had a couple of those early on, but the movie never stops to point at those and take time out of the audience's busy day to make sure that we saw it 10 times. And that I think they did do well with, but I do see what you're saying, Dan. It doesn't feel like the world was crafted for its characters. It feels like it was crafted for us, the audience. And then the characters were like implanted into it. I get what you mean by that.
And there was such a low barrier to entry for the magical world. Like I said before, it took them a day to go from, I didn't know magic existed, to I am now a master. And then you've got the fairies that are like, oh, we don't fly anymore. And then just one of them trips over like a bottle cap and boom, now they can fly. And then you've got the manticore who has been domesticated. She's like, oh, I don't do that anymore. And then all of a sudden she can do it. And there's like, oh, what about you? Use your wings. Oh, I haven't flown in a while. And then all of a sudden she's outmaneuvering like a magic dragon. There was nobody who tried to do anything magical that failed.
Well, and here's, so let me, meet me with, so Chris Pratt's character explains all of this because he is the one who's been reading all of these stories, which everyone assumes is basically silly and for kids. And he's like, no, this is serious historical stuff. And what they mention frequently, like you have to say it, but you can't speak it. You have to, what does he say? You have to speak from your heart fire. And he explains that you have, it basically, you have to speak it with the right passion and conviction. So him teaching his brother, and also it's central. So this is how I'm explaining the brother learning all of this stuff in one day, even though the answer is it's a kids movie. And of course, but the bigger answer is the whole point is that he's learning that his older brother has been teaching him and been a really great father figure this whole time. And this is actually part of it. So the older brother teaches the younger brother this, and the more the younger brother learns to trust the older brother, the better he becomes at magic, because he's learning. It's the magic symbolism, Dan. It's symbolism.
I'm okay with symbolism. I just
and so no, and it's, you know, it's, yeah, it's lazy symbolism, but it's there. And so the more their bond is connected, the more the brother just learns his value, and he learns to basically speak with his heart fire, and he has to believe it, and he has to really believe it. He can't for a second doubt it in these things. And so he's doing these things. He's, you know, he's just able to do it because he can't, because the plot requires him. So anytime there's like, oh no, he's been trying to learn this spell and he keeps failing, but now that he has to use it in this exact moment, of course it's going to work because it's heightened emotional state. With the pixies, when he, like, they set up, it's, you know, it is a Chekhov's gun, where the Chris Pratt character tells him, why don't you fly? Like, what do you mean, why don't we fly? You have wings. We don't do that. Like, well, but you could. And they set that premise up, that the pixies aren't even thinking of doing that, because no one does that anymore, but they could. So after this heightened road rage moment, the pixies learn they can fly. So that didn't catch me off guard. I'm like, okay, cool. That's payoff there. The manticore is also, it's been domesticated, sure, but they keep pushing her and pointing out, like, you used to be this, you used to be that. And she has that moment where she basically realizes she hates her job, she hates her life, and she wants to go back to the way she was. And she rages out, and she doesn't just fully embrace manticore immediately. You slowly get, first she blows fire and everything, gets crazy, then she uses her scorpion tail, eventually she can fly again. It all worked for me, that it's like, once the idea was placed in their heads, they start to kind of wake up. It's like, what if the Matrix, Dan? What if the Matrix? That's onward right there. It's just the Matrix, Dan.
I mean, it seems like there's two different things going on. First, it was, we know about magic, but we don't want to use it anymore because it's too tough. Mm-hmm. And then we switch gears to, we know about magic, but it's just not in vogue to do it anymore. And they should have stuck with one. If it was just, it's hard to do unless you're passionate, and they leaned on, mm-hmm. like, people just lost their passion and got kind of beaten down into the ho-hum drum of their daily lives, and magic was harder to access, and you needed this passionate Chris Pratt to shake them out of their stupor, that's great. But to say, like, oh, technology was just easier and people got lazy, but at any point in any given day, all magic could come back. I don't know. It seemed like, why wouldn't there be pockets of people who say, oh, vinyl is much richer, and also I can levitate, you know, like people who still did magic for fun.
There you go, though, Dan. You just fixed it with essentially one line of dialogue. All they needed was to pan over to a magic hipster, some guy who's like, no, it's a lot better if you do it the right way, using the old ways, and has, you know, like, uses a magic wand to heat up a pot of hipster coffee or something like that. That right there would explain it, I think.
Well, they did explain in the opening that magic is supposed to be hard to learn, and the point is that the world used to be full of magic, and now the world is not full of magic because people stopped using it, people stopped embracing it, so people have inherently less magic. And that's the whole point, is that the dad gives this wizard staff to his sons and saying, I hope basically there's still some magic left in you. And it turns out in the 16-year-old son, on his birthday, he finds out, yes, he does have magic in him. Chris Pratt's older brother doesn't have any magic. He can't do any magic spells. And they point that out. He's trying this magic for, you know, hours, and it doesn't work. But then the younger brother can do it. So that it's like, so there is certain things. Like, some people are magic and have the magic. Some people just don't. Most people don't. Pixies are inherently a magical, very magical creature. So those make sense that they would just kind of have it. Because you kind of see him using it a little bit, the way they're like powering their motorcycle, it seemed like they're almost possessing the motorcycle a little bit.
Or something.
Yeah, they never really explained that. And I'm like, okay, whatever. The big reveal that, oh no, the biker gang is pixies. Look out.
Well, fair enough.
I don't have as big of like a world building problem as Dan does with it. I have most, like, if I have any gripes about the movie, I actually really enjoyed it. And just like you, Chris, I teared up in spots because I have a very close relationship with my big brother. So it hit me right in those spots. But I have problems with a couple of storytelling devices. Number one, and this is always a gripe of mine, is any road trip movie, any buddy comedy, any, you know, two mismatched pair doing something difficult, like, you know, Race Against Time or something. I'm so tired of the trope of, oh, hey, by happenstance, something negative you think about me is revealed to me, and I'm now angry at you, and we are going to part ways because clearly this partnership does not work. So let's just, and no, don't do that. I'm so sick of that device, especially in the case of like, no, you have only a couple of hours to see your father again. There is no time for the beat where the older brother finds out that his younger brother thinks he's a screw up. So he starts sulking and not wanting to participate. And now they have this rift between the two of them. I can't handle that. It's such a nakedly lazy piece of screenwriting. Tommy Boy, Dumb and Dumber. It was kind of lazy and overused in the 90s, let alone now. Anytime there's a buddy comedy where, you know, they're a mismatched pair, I kind of just want that moment to be called out. It would have been great if we have that moment of tension where the circumstances being, oh, he's not allowed to tell any lies, and that's what holds the magic, is he has to tell the truth. And as soon as he says, oh, you think I'm a screw up, oh, the magic wavers, and it's like, oh, you do think he's a screw up. I think it would have been a great reversal of that rift device for the older brother. Dude, it's okay. I know you think I'm a screw up. Everybody thinks I'm a screw up. That doesn't make any of you right. Mm-hmm. I think that would have been a lot more clever to subvert the expectation of, oh no, now he's going to be mad at him, and now they're going to have a fight, and now things are going to get worse because they're not working together. I don't do that. It's unnecessary. Yeah.
I have a fix for that, Kyle, and it stems to more script rewriting that I would do. Going way back to the core of the main character, Spider-Man, Elf's person.
By the way, we have to acknowledge that the brothers' names are Ian and Barley. Because I thought, yes, Barley was a good idea. Right.
Well, I don't know who is who, so I'm going to keep calling it Spider-Man Elf.
Spider-Man
Elf.
Got it.
Yeah. He's afraid of everything. You know, he has no friends. And it just seems weird for me, because if he never met his dad, he basically just grew up with a single mom. So it's kind of insulting to say him growing up with a single mom has led to this such a dysfunctional human, well, elf being. I would have had him fully embracing, again, order, rigidity, you know, have an itinerary. This is when I go here. This is when I go here. And have his Chris Pratt a la Jack Black from School of Rock brother continually messing things up, and have that be the main conflict. He wants to be orderly because he feels somehow that he lost control of his dad. So he needs to force rigidity and structure into everything else in his life. And then have the main conflict replacing that thing you don't like with Chris Pratt forces them to go on his gut instinct in a different direction, and it wastes time. They go off in the wrong way. They get lost. And he's like, we won't be able to get there. We just lost hours. This is your fault. You need to stop being so chaotic. If we had followed my rule, we would have been there sooner. And they kind of allude to that, but it doesn't land very strongly because that wasn't ever a conflict between them.
I was expecting that exact thing to happen, actually, especially when they get to the point where it's like, oh no, Raven's Point, it's not a place. It's literally that Raven statue is pointing in that direction. Let's go in that direction. I really felt that exactly was going to happen, where they were going to lose hours following his gut and have to backtrack to an actual place. I'm not.
Didn't show up until near the end, where they come out of the manhole and they're in front of the school, and that's like 10 minutes before the end of the movie.
Yeah, and then there's no time to really dwell on it because they go straight into, you know, the next bit with the dragon coming to life and all that. So, yeah, no, I mean that might have been a better way to queer their relationship at the zero hour. I realize that kind of thing has to happen in order for the third act to begin. I get that. I'm so sick of seeing the same beats in every, you know, buddy mismatched pair road trip, but I'll take it because I know, again, it's a children's movie. It's got to have a fairly simple structure to it. My only other device beat that I'm not a huge fan of, and I knew this was going to be a sticking point for me as soon as I saw the trailer, is the dad being just a pair of legs. It's a very funny gag for a few minutes when they make it a funny gag. And then for the rest of the movie, it just seems like an inconvenience to both the characters and the plot. And they just got him on a leash. They build him a little half body to sit on him so that people don't freak out. That's a funny joke that then they have to stick with that for the rest of the movie. And I just felt like I would have liked it better if the dad was able to communicate with them, or if they had to like stick him in the fridge and come back to the legs. I really didn't want a pair of legs to be following them around like a poodle for the whole movie, but I did get that. And I get why it has to happen, but it bugs me because it renders their dad the essentially central figure of this, and it renders him into a pet, which felt very strange to me.
I've got a fix for that too. The fix for that is if they're going to do Weekend at Bernie's, where they, you know, have him, the body of the dad, lean out the window and instigate the elves or whatever, or the pixies.
Right.
Go full on Weekend at Bernie. The reason Weekend at Bernie was so funny is because he kept getting like stabbed and shot and stuff.
Yeah.
So have the half of the dad, the upper half, continually like damaged and destroyed, even at some point like stabbed, and for a moment they get scared and then they remember, oh wait, that's not really him. And they kind of did that where the dad got cut in half, but again, very close to the end, they could have been doing that the entire time.
That's
the kid
true
would have loved it.
Crash test dummy peril. Yeah. Yes, that would have been, I think that would have helped me out with that. Is I think the biggest problem I have with it is give the dad, even though he's just a pair of legs, give him something to, because he didn't really get much of anything to do, even as kind of their map. He gets one scene where he gets to do a little bit of dancing. Really, every time that they bring the dad legs to the forefront of what's going on, it just got my brain going of, wait, so their dad is present, like mentally and emotionally, he's there with them, but to what end? Like his head is not there, his heart is not there present. Only half of him came back to life and it's his leg. So is he experiencing the whole road trip and the whole adventure in another plane of existence? That is very D&D style explanation, but you got to explain that, like, oh, the other half of him is still in the ethereal plane or something like that. I realize it's Disney and Pixar and it's American audiences, so you can't explain the afterlife in a children's movie. It just got me wondering how much of this is their dad present for, especially when he starts dancing.
Yeah.
But maybe I'm just plain overthinking it.
Well, let me play the I don't know what I'll let me play the jerk in this again and ask the tough questions. First question: would you rather watch this again or Frozen 2?
Frozen 2.
Really?
Really?
All right.
Huh.
Olaf and Kristoff's ballad bring me more joy than anything this movie did. Not that this movie offends me, but it went right by my heart.
Frozen 2 is definitely A League. This one is certainly B League, maybe C listers. Like, this one got kicked out and was like, this movie, I think, already was coming out to die anyway, in terms of, like, Pixar.
I don't think that it would have died like a horrible, like, The Good Dinosaur death. I think it would have been more along the lines of, like, Monsters University, where people don't dig on it enough to go see it, but it would probably do a lot better on home video. Like, I even recently, because we're watching anything we can, we finally sat down and watched Monsters University for the first time only a week or two ago. And
really?
I was pleasantly surprised, because I wasn't interested at all when it came out. I said it's a good way of keeping that world alive is doing a prequel in college as a way to not do a sequel where they have to make children laugh, because that's the end of the original movie. Conceptually, on their point, did not sound interesting to me. But it didn't sound as bad as like a Cars 2, where it's like, oh, well, we'll focus on the breakout comedic character and we'll just change genres and make it a spy movie or some nonsense.
That was a terrible movie.
Monsters University is a delight. There's so many scenes in that movie that come to mind. You've got the great training college montages. You've got the moment where they scare so many people in the human world that they power the monster world from the other side. I mean, these are great moments. And for my money and onward, it really only had 1.5 moments that reached that level. The one moment, I'll get to the half later, but the one moment is when Spider-Man Elf is summoning the invisible bridge, and he is walking across it, but he has a rope tied to him just as a safety precaution, and the bridge will only work as long as he's, you know, believing himself and passionate about it, and Chris Pratt Elf is on the side, like, cheering him on. And then Chris Pratt sees that the rope, like, disengaged, like it came untied, and to close your eyes and just listen to the scene, it sounds fine, you know, like, except for maybe the music cues. Spider-Man Elf is like, yeah, this is great, and Chris Pratt Elf is like, yeah, you're doing so great. But then when you open your eyes and then you listen to the music cues, and you can see Chris Pratt, like, trying to sound confident but crying profusely, because he knows the moment his brother loses confidence or realizes the rope isn't there, he's going to die. And Chris Pratt is looking at him like, this is another of my family members I have to watch die. It was very, very powerful. That's the only full scene that I remember. And the half scene is near the end, where you realize, I'll take your cue, Chris, and not give too much away, but you realize that one of the brothers is not going to get the catharsis that he wanted, and he's okay with that.
Yeah.
And it seemed like they didn't know what they wanted to do with that scene, because he's physically barred from getting somewhere. Mm-hmm. And he's also injured, in case people say, why doesn't he just, like, climb out over it? So with those puzzle pieces in place, or rather chess pieces in place, you think, okay, they're going to set it up for him to be, like, scrambling to get out of there, and he's fighting against his injury and he's fighting against the physical barrier. But then you see that he's not fighting it at all. He's not trying to climb out. He's not even trying to get closer. He knows that his brother needs it more than he does. So why bother with the barrier or the injury? It's like a red herring for no reason. So that's why I only give that scene a half. So you're 1.5. See.
I did really enjoy the invisible bridge scene. Not only just because I instantly went, hey, Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, but I also, I'm glad I, but I really enjoyed that scene, because it is a direct symbol of the younger brother's problem is his confidence problem. So, you know, his older brother pushing him despite seeing that he's in immediate peril, it speaks directly to his, you know, both of their arcs, really. I thought that was a good scene.
Yeah.
I, to answer your previous question, which would I rather watch again, this or Frozen 2? I mean, I've already watched Frozen 2 a few, but I think a big difference, it is kind of an apples and oranges thing, because Frozen 2 not being a Pixar movie, they can skate through on a lot of the Disney tropes of, first off, musical, and the Frozen movies are top-notch musical, chiefly because a lot of the emotional big moments of those Frozen movies are done in song. And a mark of a good musical is that a bad musical is if you take all the songs out and it doesn't affect the plot. Whereas a good musical, like a Frozen movie, the songs are integral to the plot and the emotional balance of the characters. The songs are where all of the big meaty stuff happens in a good musical. And I think that Frozen has that distinct advantage over Onward, which is trying, you know, it has to be a contemporary story in a contemporary world. It doesn't have music to fall back on for emotional heft. And it doesn't have established characters like Frozen 2 does, with all of the baggage attached to them. So it's a really hard compare, because Frozen 2 is almost easier to get through than Frozen 1 at this point. Like, it just has it's not even a pacing thing. It's just kind of, it moves
quick.
Well, it moves quick, but it also is a case of, it moves so tidy in its movement. Frozen 2 never has a moment where, you know, this character misunderstands this other character, and if not for this one misunderstanding, everything would be solved, but now the world comes crumbling down or something. It's very much, okay, the heroes discover, you know, the problem, they seek out the problem, they solve the problem, they get home in time to see the problem solved. That's kind of it. And the meat of it is what's happening to them emotionally. But so with Onward, I think that part of the issue with Onward versus Frozen 2, which would I rather watch again? Frozen 2 would be an easier watch, because Onward does get, I don't even want to say, because it sounds too harsh, it doesn't get bogged down and it doesn't get tripped up, but it slows down for joke moments that don't really grind it to a halt, but it takes the path of peril. It takes kind of the leisurely scenic route towards towards the big moments. And I think that's why there aren't as big of moments to remember for you, Dan, is there's a lot of shoe leather that you have to get past in order to get to those moments. So there's not as much connection to them.
Yeah. Well, here's a question, because I found that Chris Pratt elf, that his character was very similar
His name is Star-Lord Elf.
Star-Lord Elf. Star-Lord Elf, his character was very similar to School of Rock Jack Black. Mm-hmm. And the thing that made School of Rock Jack Black so memorable is that, you know, he kept thinking music was great and that it was going to happen for him, and everybody else said, you need to give up on this dream. And to see him like slowly maybe lose his dream, and everybody can kind of relate to, you know, something that they were passionate about that they had to get rid of as a concession to life. With this one, you know, he says, oh, you think I'm a screw up with his brother. I don't remember anyone ever telling him to change his life. They're just like, he's a screw up and we don't care. Like, everybody gave up on him.
It does jump very, very quickly over that bit at the beginning where they're not quite stepdad, but their mom's boyfriend has to point out, every time there's trouble, it's always because of you, like chaining yourself to an old monument or something from the magic world from the past. And they jump over that so fast. They really should have maybe used that a little bit more to be like, oh yeah, Barley, he's kind of a, you know, history activist where he doesn't want, you know, an ancient fountain with magical waters destroyed or something like that. I mean, I know that I just praised the movie for not lingering on too many, you know, I keep calling them Flintstone gags, because that's really what I think of when I think of world, lazy world building that is then pointed at as a feature rather than a bug.
Mm-hmm.
But that is one thing where they jump over the animosity between Colt Bronco and Barley so fast that I think they were hesitant to make that an actual adversarial relationship because they don't want Colt to be a villain character. Mm. I think it's become very important in modern Disney and Pixar movies, maybe less so in Pixar because of Incredibles and the Disney Prime movies. They do not want villain characters anymore. The Frozen movies, Moana, Wreck-It, particularly Ralph Breaks the Internet. There's no real villain or adversary so much as circumstance, time, a lack of identity or confidence in identity. They're way less like good guy has to fight bad guy movies, and they're way more this hero character has to learn who they are kind of movies. And that's very present and Onward. That's the whole movie is who am I and what's special about me and how do I use it? So making the time crunch the main adversary of the movie and not making their, soon to be stepdad the adversary might have hurt in that regard for what's Barley's arc. Do people really want him to not be a screw up or to change his life?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What made him a screw up?
They don't lean too heavily on it.
Here's the next question.
I don't know. Yeah.
We'll start with you, Dan. Is this the worst Pixar movie or what is the worst Pixar movie?
I don't think it's the worst Pixar movie because it is fun. Like, it's a good movie. It's just not a good Pixar movie. I'd say the Good Dinosaur is the worst Pixar movie because not only is there no villain, but there's also no real time crunch. I mean, he wants to get home, but there's no time limit. He just does it when he does it. And at least with this one, there's a time limit, and you always get the sense that every time somebody makes a mistake, that's less time he has they have with their father, and he's crossing things out on the list. And that was a very poignant measurement of time. Good Dinosaur, it was just, you got this scaredy cat dinosaur, and by the end, he was less scared. Oh, yay.
Yeah, I would agree there. The Good Dinosaur is my least favorite Pixar movie. I had no fun in it at all. I did not like the main character. I didn't like the human boy. Hated him. I hate that obnoxious, like, oh, he's like a dog. And I hate that. I also hated that the premise for The Good Dinosaur is such a wasted premise because it seems really cool. It's like, what if the meteor that was supposed to kill the dinosaurs missed and dinosaurs still existed? And it's like, what a great premise that then they totally waste. They're like, that's right. So now fast forward, and now we're going to follow a dinosaur in the, I don't know, middle ages, early ages. They've learned agriculture. That's where we're at. And I'm like, wait, so like, this could still just be any dinosaur movie, except you've decided that they have the one human trait of farming.
And that is the only one piece of explanation for why there's a human and a dinosaur at the same time.
Yeah, which is like...
Would get more than just the Christian fundamentalists, you know?
Yeah, and I look at that and I'm like, okay, I didn't like that. Good Dinosaur, I had no fun in. Onward, I had a lot of fun in. I love this one. This is not my least favorite Pixar. It's not my favorite Pixar. I think my favorite's still probably The Incredibles. Dang, I love that one. But like, this one's a good solid middle ground for me. Like, Good Dinosaur is my least favorite, followed very closely by Cars 2. Although that's
I forgot about Cars 2. Oh no.
Like I'd rather watch Cars 2 than I would The Good Dinosaur, because at least the Cars 2 knows what it's supposed to be. Cars 2 is naked about it, and I will at least I'll toast him for that.
I'm gonna diverge and say you guys are crazy. I would watch The Good Dinosaur again in a second if I was threatened with Cars 2. Because Cars 2 is It is a Pixar movie that is masquerading as the worst DreamWorks or worst Illumination movie. It is so desperately seeking the, you know, the currency of pop culture, and it hinges entirely on a premise that has just been yanked out of a completely different movie and put into the Cars world, which is shaky enough as it is. I know that everybody will harp on, you know, Cars 1 is just Doc Hollywood. Okay, but at least it establishes this world and explains without necessarily explaining. It's a world with cars in it, so things exist but for cars. The second one is just like, look, we're going to dispense with any idea that this is a world that exists. It's just to make stupid puns. It's just to introduce high-priced voice acting. It is the most nakedly cynical Pixar movie there is. And that's no mean feat when you consider how many crazy sequels we've been getting. Onward is the first non-sequel Pixar movie we've gotten in like a decade, other than The Good Dinosaur, I think.
And they had Bruce Campbell, and they killed him.
That's true. There you go.
Wait, which was Bruce Campbell?
He was the actual American spy that everybody mistook Mater for, and they kill Bruce Campbell, and so they think Mater is the spy. How dare they?
When I think of Pixar, it's like every Pixar movie has an easy, like, premise boiled down. What if toys were alive? What if fish had lives to speak of? What if superheroes were like us? What if cars had a life? And then Cars 2 is like, what if we made a shit ton of money? And then they move on. And I'm like, you know, I understand your premise. That one works for me. And that's why The Good Dinosaur doesn't, because the premise is, what if the dinosaurs didn't die, but we're not really going to use that. It's just, what if like there was a human with a dinosaur? Well, I know you saw that. But what if this one was like Tarzan, but like he's not Tarzan. He's a different one.
Let me help you out with that, though, because The Good Dinosaur, I always felt like the premise to that movie was never properly explained to the audience, because when I saw like a trailer for it, I was like, okay, so it's like the, you know, cave boy finds the dinosaur and the dinosaur followed him home, but in reverse, where the cave boy follows the dinosaur home. And he's like, that's not really the whole premise of the movie. Really, the elevator pitch for The Good Dinosaur is, it's Homeward Bound Dinosaur Edition. It's just the long, overly earnest journey home for a sweet, you know, animal that we're projecting a personality on. Mm-hmm. And really, I didn't enjoy The Good Dinosaur. It might be the first Pixar movie that my family said, you know, we could just shut this off. We don't have to finish it. And that was my kids who will watch absolute garbage. My kids voluntarily watch those Air Bud, like Super Puppy movies that are not actual movies. Those are not movies, but my kids will watch them. But they couldn't watch The Good Dinosaur. This is the problem, is a Pixar movie at its heart, just in prototype, is this balance between the pop culture and merchandising and fun, you know, visual gags and dialogue, you know, all of the stuff that make Pixar fun. And then the other side of it, which is the emotional heft that every Pixar movie strives to achieve. The problem with The Good Dinosaur is that it leans way too far towards the emotional heft, and it's just too earned, and it's no fun. Cars 2 is the opposite, where it leans fully on the idea of, you know, these movies don't have to have substance. It could just be a fun movie so that we could sell some toys. Mm-hmm. And I am much more angry at Pixar for choosing to do one than the other. And I'm much more angry about Cars 2, in my opinion.
I like the message of Cars 3, which is, it doesn't matter how great you were a long time ago. You're old now. Get out of the way.
What a way to wrap this up, I think.
it wouldn't be a Dan episode if we didn't touch on the fact that Dan hates old people.
Get out of the way, old people.
He needed beep, to step beep. Aside.
Get out of the way.
Well, I mean, maybe the message of Finding Nemo is not what if fish had lives, it's what if a fish was Jewish. Just neurotic all the time.
Ah, that's good. That's good.
Oh boy.
I just think it was a missed opportunity to make Albert Brooks an actual Brooke.
But I like him, but some people can't stand his voice. That's not as colorful, I realize.
All right, well, final thoughts on this one.
Final thoughts on Onward. I definitely put it in the upper half of Pixar movies. I think that it accomplishes for not too much of a cost, whereas something like The Good Dinosaur is asking too much of the audience in order to achieve its ends. And the saving grace of it is it's a lot of fun, and the characters have really good chemistry, not just the brothers, but we didn't really get into it a lot, but the mom character and the Manticore have a great B plot that ends both of their arcs too in a satisfying way. So I think that it was fun enough that we're going to end up rewatching it in my house, and I don't have a problem with that. And the van is really cool.
Yeah. Gotta love it.
And it was cool. Final thoughts for me. I don't think that it's made for people who are going to analyze it in any way. I think it's made for kids, and that's okay. It's okay because, you know, my kids had already seen it in the theaters, and then when it popped up on Disney Plus, they were like, "You're gonna love it. You're gonna love the dragon." I'm like, "Well, thanks for the spoiler, kids." But we get to the dragon, and they were so tickled that the dragon was built from chunks of the school. And when it roared, it was like the school bell. And that was so in tune with their life experience to that point that I got. I was like, okay, this is not for me. This is for them. And they are having fun. So in that respect, it succeeded. Whereas the goddamn Good Dinosaur with its scary storm, I took my son to see that in theaters, and he was crying. I had to take him out of the room because he was so scared. So that's why that's a terrible Pixar movie.
My final thoughts. I really liked Onward. It got me crying at the end. It got me crying in a few moments. I thought the humor was really funny. I like Chris Pratt, and I like Tom Holland a lot. So I thought that was really fun. It is interesting to me that this movie has had a huge impact on Charlie, and he's actually been scared the last two nights. Can you guess what has him terrified to the point that he's now come out of his room tonight and last night scared?
Gelatinous cube?
Yeah. The gelatinous cube has him straight up terrified.
That's classic.
Because he's now afraid because he realized just yesterday, wait a minute, my room is shaped like a square. What if the ceiling opens up and this thing comes out? And I tried to like calm him down yesterday. I'm like, oh, buddy, it's just made up. And my wife explains like, well, this is partly my fault. I showed him, he asked about the monster at that thing. He's like, what is that? And I looked it up and she's like, I didn't realize it was an actual Dungeons and Dragons monster, the gelatinous cube. I'm like, oh, yeah, you know. But like, it's still that's silly, joke, right? And she's basically. And she's like, yes, but I pulled up some pictures of him not thinking. And the first pictures were from, you know, Dungeons and Dragons. So it had like skeletons and stuff like burned, like acided inside of it. And that really got to Charlie. And so he's like, scared of this. And I'm trying to like, oh, buddy, it's Jell-O monster. It's supposed to be silly. It's what if Jell-O was the scary monster? And he's like, oh, and I'm like, what if ice cream? What if it was an ice cream monster? Think of that. Like, what if it was a pudding monster? And he starts to kind of, you know, laugh. I'm like, and he's like, what if it was this, was that? I'm like, what if it was a cookie monster? And I laugh, ha, we already have a cookie monster, don't we? And then, ha, ha, ha. But he still is like, yeah, he's still terrified of the gelatinous cube. And I'm like, oh, man, I don't know how to help you feel better other than like trying to make you some Jell-O and telling you to eat it. But then like, would that scar him more? Like, master your fear, eat the gelatinous cube.
Make him Jell-O jigglers.
Yeah. It's like, he knows what Jell-O is. He knows it's not real. And I keep telling him, you know, he knows the difference between real and fake. And his other big thing is zombies. And he's very, very like, he has so many questions about zombies. And I have to try to explain like, as best I can, like, I don't have any fear of zombies. Like, you're not afraid of zombies? Like, no. Like, why? Well, first off, let me run down my list of reasons I'm not afraid of zombies. First, I'm going to tell you they're not real. Second, I'm going to explain the historical context of zombies from the Haitian zombies from Vodou. And then I'm going to explain to you how I have not only played the Resident Evil games, I've also played the Dead Rising games, and I've also read World War Z and have read the Zombie Survival Guide. So I am versed in multiple forms of zombie. I'm not afraid if I had to fight one. Here's the end of Walking Dead and all this. And then I can't explain that. So I just have to say, they're not real, and they'll never be real. They're just pretend. Don't be afraid. Like, what would you do if you saw a zombie? I wouldn't be afraid. Like, how would you stop it? Like, well, first off, I'd say you're not real and it wouldn't be. And then next, I would destroy it. I'd kick its head in or something. I mean, you can't also get too explicit when he's like, kill a zombie? Well, son, I would pick up the heaviest blunt force object and smash its head in so its brain splatter. And you know, when you destroy a zombie's brain stem, it stops moving. It's like...
I think you've just described a lot of dads who do not have it together. Who,
oh yeah,
would explain in detail their zombie apocalypse scenario. I would just tell my kid that I've seen The Walking Dead and the humans are the real monsters.
Yeah. Oh, well, I'm not gonna. Yeah, that's even better, son. You don't have to be afraid of monsters because monsters aren't real. Now, rapists, those you gotta watch out for. Like, wait, you don't tell your son that. Wrong.
No.
Dad fail.
Oh
no.
Let me pull up some pictures of that.
Dad,
let me pull up some pictures of the guy on bath salts who ate another guy's face.
Yeah, there Dad, you go.
Dude, do gelatinous cubes really exist in this world? No, they don't, but let me tell you about our president. All right, where can people find us? Where can they find this podcast, Kyle?
Well, all episodes of Drat are available at our parent site, which is media-sandwich.com, or you can find it on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, if you're into that. I'm not anymore. Or on Stitcher, or on any third-party podcatcher app. You can find it via our RSS feed. And the link is right there on the post on the website as well, so you can listen in your browser. And if you have any problems finding it, you can find everything at the Media Sandwich Twitter, which is media_sandwich. And I'll probably repost that too under @KyleMartinak on Twitter as well.
There you go.
And where can we find you guys on there? You're both on there. You're doing stuff.
I'm on there.
On the Twitter?
Yeah.
On the Twitter? We're dads, so we have to say the Twitter in front of Twitter.
Well,
I'm at No Right Tweet.
And I'm at the Chris Pranger. There are many Chris Prangers, but I'm the Chris Pranger.
Uh-huh, yes. And if you have any opinions about our opinions on Onward or our opinions on The Good Dinosaur or Cars 2 or our opinions on Ben Shapiro or the GOP, you can send us an email about it at we only have the one email address, so that's mediasandwichshow@gmail.com, and we may or may not read your opinion of our opinions.
I would love to read it. I dare you.
I would read it by fire.
He said dare.
You send me opinions, you cowards.
See, Chris is just saying that because I'm the one who reads the emails.
Do we get emails?
No.
We could.
We could get emails. It is a functioning email address, so use it, I guess.
I imagine that you open the email and it's empty and you just howl, just quietly to yourself.
I'm only getting emails from restaurants that I visited 15 years ago to tell me that I can't visit them now because of the virus. So that's fine.
Well, there you go.
I would appreciate an empty email at this point.
Yeah. Everyone, you stay safe out there. Go watch some more streaming stuff. We'll have some more stuff. We'll be back with more Media Sandwich and Drat in following months.
Yeah. Oh, certainly, absolutely.
We got time to watch stuff and
there's time now.
There's finally time. All right. Goodbye, everybody.
Good.
Bye. Goodbye.